Welcome to the 100 Master Coaches series featuring master coaches from around the world. Let's journey together on this 100 Master Coaches series with your host, Coach Mel, MCC. An experienced coach, trainer, and community builder, Christy is recognized for her ability to create safe and brave spaces that foster courageous transformations. As founder and CEO at Awaken Coach Institute, Christy has helped shape the journeys of hundreds of coaches and clients, equipping them with the tools to engage in deeper, more authentic interactions. Christy holds the ICF's Master Certified Coach credential, a Master NLP certificate, as well as certifications in spiritual direction, group coaching, depth coaching, Enneagram work, and mentor coaching. Now onto the show.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the 100 Master Coaches Show. This is Coach Mel, and today on the show, my special guest is Christy Byerly. Welcome to the show, Christy.
Thank you for braving all the R's and L's in my surname.
You are a wonderful coach to me, so it was easy peasy. Well, thank you for being on the show, Christy. Hey, let's start at the very beginning. Let's start at a place where you can tell us all about Christy. Let's focus on you.
One of my identities, I would say, is a global nomad. A lot of times people are trying to figure out, where are you from? Because you're living in France, but you have this American accent. And it was funny, I was doing some improv a couple weeks ago, and
wow,
a couple of us got sent out of the room while other people were doing something. It was, you know, and then we were supposed to come back in and not know what was going on. So we were just chatting. And so this woman was like, okay, so you're a coach now. And then she was like, I work in nuclear energy. I'm like, oh, me too. I worked in nuclear energy for, you know, 15 years. And it's like, oh, really? And where are you from? I'm like, well, that's a hard question. You know, I first couple decades in America, but then a lot of time in Kenya. And by the end of the conversation, she's like, are you pulling my leg here? Or is this like really your life? Sounds so normal to me, but she's like, okay, so nuclear energy, but coaching, but Kenya, but America, and now France. And right. It can get really complicated to like describe how this even happened. I don't even know how it happened, but anyway, here I am living in France as an Italian citizen, which is another little story coming back to my roots from four generations ago. So my family did about 110 years in America. And so now I'm in the process of letting go of America more and more, even while feeling sad and grateful and all kinds of things for my home country.
Yeah.
And figuring out, do I have roots? Do I want roots? Or is global citizen good enough for me? So,
Well, it's good enough for us, Christy, you're on the show. So, you know, as we were talking a little bit before the show about you being a podcaster, you being on the other side asking the questions, today the spotlight is on you. And I'm excited to explore this little journey of understanding how you came about becoming a coach, to understand that from that. Now you've put that curiosity in me about that nuclear bit way back there. I'm like, okay, that's a newbie for me. I didn't see that in your profile. So perhaps we start there, if that's okay with you, right? Maybe that will lead us to coaching somehow.
Yeah, somehow it might. Well, yeah, because I think so many things have just sort of happened because of other things. So I guess one thing is that my dad was very, he really wanted all of his kids to be international. He wanted us to have a wide open view of the world. You know, his parents were second generation immigrants to America, and he just really he did a lot of traveling in Zurich and, you know, other places, but he really wanted us to not forget that, like, America is not all there is. And so when I was 14, I got a scholarship through his company to go travel to Belgium for the summer and came back speaking French. And then ended up, while I was at university, I spent four of my, well, every summer I would go back to France to study or to work or whatever. And I just kept kind of, it was just a, it was a fun thing to do, but it got me a French major. So then when I graduated with communications in French, I took a job as a communications manager for a French company, which happened to be in nuclear energy. So I ended up learning a whole lot about what kinds of handles are on waste tanks and things like that that I never thought I would learn in my life. But I while I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, there were some folks at my church who had a program based on the book, What Color Is Your Parachute? And it was all about figuring out who you are and what you want to do. So my husband and I went through this coaching course on figuring yourself out. And the results of that program said that I should be a teacher or a counselor. And so I was like, huh, I don't like preparing lesson plans. I don't like assessments and exams. I do love being with people and learning. So, like, yes, learning would be great. And I love being in a group of people where we all get to be expanding what we know, but I'm not preparing lesson plans for little kids. And, like, this doesn't make any sense. And then the other option that was kind of in 97th percentile was I should be a counselor. And I was just like, no, no way. I am not listening to people's problems all day long. Like, if we could have fun conversations, that would be great. But so I just went ahead and did this kind of lengthy career in corporate, global, you know, a really big company, and did a lot of traveling and had this career and kind of dropped it. But it wasn't like I was following my calling or passion or anything like that. So then when I got to Paris, I got this 3-year contract in Paris, and I went into a massive burnout when I was pregnant with our second child. And it was really confusing because I couldn't stop crying. I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't eating well. And I'm like, something needs to change quickly. And a friend of mine who is still a coach, and she lives 10 minutes from my house now on the other side of France, offered me 10 free coaching sessions.
Wow.
Because she was in a coach training and she needed a guinea pig. And so it was so dramatic because I took these 10 sessions. I just thought I was doing her a favor, you know, help my friend out, spend some hours with her. And coming out of that period of coaching, I was like, I'm selling my house in the States. I'm moving to Kenya. I want to have a third kid. I'm quitting my job. Like, I just made all these huge decisions. And I was like, what just happened? How does that work? And so then later, when I was living in Kenya and I had three little kids, there was another coach who was doing a Cairo to Cape Town tour. She had Wisdom TV and she was coming through and interviewing African women leaders for this program. And she happened to come by Nairobi, where I was living, and invited about eight of us. I was the only non-African in the group, but somehow I got invited to this coaching circle. And I had been looking at coaching schools for months, if not years, just could not decide, do I want to do this? It's so expensive. How can I waste money on myself? Who do I think I am? Like, all these questions. And she went around the table and she said, I'm going to ask you three of the most basic coaching questions. Round one is, what do you want? Round two is, what's holding you back? And round three is, what are you doing next? And, you know, looking back as an MCC and having been coaching for 15 years, I'm like, those are basic questions, but they're so core.
Yes.
They are the core coaching questions. And she had just lasered in on that. And something about being in that group and listening to one another's honest answers brought so much courage out in us. And I heard myself saying, I want to take a coaching course. I don't think I could even say at that time that I want to be a coach. I said, I want to take this coaching course. And then the next question, what's holding you back? I was like, if I tell my mom, she's going to say, who do you think you are? And you're such a basket case. And how could you, you know, you're a mess. And how can you help anybody else with their life? And as I said those things out loud, I was like, what? That's how I make my decisions. That's really dumb. That is not a voice I want to be listening to at all. So then the third round, what are you going to do next? I'm like, I'm going to go buy this course. Like now, how soon can I leave this discussion and go do it? Wow. So I did go home and I already had in my mind which course I wanted. And so I went to their website and went to make my purchase. And it was the last day of a 50% off sale for Africa. And I was like, well, I have an African IP.
Perfect.
So I went and bought the course. And man, did it change my life. I had no idea I was going to come out just a different person.
Beautiful. I want to clap for that. That's so, so amazing. Three simple questions. And how you answered, some of it made sense. Some of it kind of shocked you. It's like, what am I living with this same narrative over my life? I've got to change the narrative. I've got to, and you know, the third question and you just going for it. Wow. That is so amazing. It's not every day that I hear this story, especially, you know, third generation, Italian American in Nairobi, making a decision like that in a coaching circle with a visiting person going from Cairo to Cape Town. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
That's correct.
She's got quite a journey. Suzanne Stevens, she's amazing. Gosh. She's a Canadian coach. Mm. Yeah. Wonderful person.
Yeah. What happened next? What happened next? You got into the course, What happened? Love to know.
Yeah. So I didn't have good internet access when the course came out. So Kenya was just getting a fiber cable from under the Indian Ocean right as I started, but it hadn't come to the campus where I was living yet. So I'm out there taking my classes underneath the laundry line, surrounded by the campus's herd of nine cows. And so they'd be mooing behind me. So I'd mute myself. And then when I would talk, people would be like, does somebody have cows behind them on this class? You know, because it was all on these teleconference lines. Yeah. It wasn't like this now where you can call in on Zoom. It was, you know, we did our coaching on Skype or in person, and we would call into these phone lines. So we couldn't see each other. It was just auditory conversations we were having. And I just started changing so much as a person. And it was actually really scary how much it flipped my whole worldview. Because I had been raised, I think calling it a cult might be a little strong, but not really strong. I mean, it was pretty insular. I went to this very tiny Dutch Reformed Christian school. And in order to attend that school, you also had to attend the church that was linked to that school on Sundays. Yeah. Church, home, school were the only places I really went. And everyone was expected to, you know, sign the same, you know, creeds that we believe this, and we're all in this worldview. And the worldview was based on a concept of the three G's: guilt, grace, gratitude. So you were meant to believe that you were guilty. However, thankfully, this punitive God had killed his own kid instead of you. And so you were meant to live the rest of your life out of this sense of gratitude. And so that was kind of the narrative that I had heard from everywhere that I was until coaching, which is kind of embarrassing to say because I was in my 30s when I started coaching. And of course, I had gone through a lot of questioning of this narrative and things before. But, you know, when you're in a really insular group like that, it's very scary to question anything because you can get kicked out of the community and then you lose pretty much everyone you've known. You can't really go back into those same relationships. So when I got into coaching, the questions like, what do you want? Nobody had ever asked me that ever. Mm-hmm. What do you want? That was not, it was not, it's it, what does God want? That was an okay question. But the idea of even trust yourself or check in with yourself and find out what you want was evil, wrong, scary, not the right thing to do. And yet now I'm all of a sudden surrounded by people who are willing to ask themselves and ask me, what do you want? And it was expected that what I wanted was probably going to be good. It wasn't going to be some kind of a evil thing that I had to stuff down or don't trust your feelings, especially if you're happy or joyful. But it was more, you're allowed to be fully alive and fully present and check in with yourself and trust yourself and do things that you love. And so that just kind of threw me into this whole like spinning world of like, what makes sense anymore? This is the opposite of anything I've been taught. And so I ended up going and taking a course in spiritual direction with the Jesuits. And that was amazing. So that was a 2-year course. And I had a prayer partner who was with the Sisters of Charity, Mother Teresa's group. And so every month I would go and have hours with this woman who had, you know, the white garment with the 2 blue stripes across. Yeah. She was so lovely. And what I found out is that the Jesuits believed the same things that I was learning in coaching. They just had a different version of the Christian faith that was very universal. And they were not particularly looking to judge everybody's sex lives or anything else. They were very much like, let's love people and do good in the world. And it felt a lot more like coaching. And what I learned in spiritual direction was what I would consider MCC level coaching. It was this very masterful leaning into this knowing that we're supported by love, both coach and client, every minute. We don't have to produce. We don't have to work so hard. We don't have to be doing stuff throughout the session. We're allowed to relax into love and invite our client to do the same. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting this from all sides. And I'm like, things could be really different. And so that just sent me on a whole different trajectory of being able to love people well, being able to love myself well. Still working on it for sure. There's a lot of old messages that are still being transformed probably for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But it's just been beautiful to just free, able to love whoever is showing up in front of me from whatever background and whatever, you know, religions they come from. Just so much openness and just letting go of fear. I don't have to worry about anybody.
And as I'm listening, Christy, I'm sensing that this projection that we have with ourselves do come up, right? And show itself sometimes. And some things are scary or still scary. Some things we're still working on and rightfully said for the rest of our lives. And then there are parts of us that has been transformed and are continuously transforming into that lightness, whatever it is, that lightness of love, that lightness of gratitude or an extension of that kindness to another human being. That's what I'm sensing. And I'm curious how that transition helped you realize that is that part of that message that you're bringing in to that world that you're supposed to be called to influence or called to impact. I'm just curious on how that flow is being allowed to align with the people that you serve these days.
Yeah, and it's changed considerably over time because, you know, 2009, when I first started coaching, it felt like an awakening, a grace awakening where there's no one to impress. We don't have to be striving really hard to save the world or fix the world or change other people. And that was, it was such an energetic shift for me. And it still is, to allow myself, like, what if my main job is to enjoy being alive? And I read a book, I forget, what was it? Ragamuffin Gospel. And the guy has his whole life, and he gets to the pearly gates, you know, he gets to heaven after he dies, and the deity is asking him about his life. And the deity only has one question for him, if he's going to get into heaven. And that is, how did you enjoy those honey-filled sopapillas? And he's like, oh, that's all you have to do to be in the kingdom of heaven is just sucking the marrow out of life, just enjoying this moment with this crispy, you know, whatever loveliness that you're about to put in your mouth. And then I had another moment. There was a Kenyan woman that I was on the school board with her, and she and I went on a safari together.
Oh, nice.
And we were out looking over the plains, and there was maybe a million, no exaggeration, wildebeest out there, just as far as the eye could see.
Wow.
Eating grass. And she just looked at them with this beautiful smile on her face and said, that's how we're meant to live. Just out in the sun, eating grass, not a care in the world. You're just one of the many, enjoying your food. And so it was this really different way of living for me, that you're just allowed to enjoy yourself and be alive. And I mean, there's always going to be, it's not like I'm going to get rid of the striving, changing the world part completely ever, nor do I need to. And I've become the CEO of a coach training program with, you know, 150 some graduates who are all off changing the world in their own way. Like, it's still there,
yeah,
but it's so much lighter. And I'm not trying to fix or change anybody. I'm just hoping that the more people spend time around Awaken, the more they'll really love and enjoy all parts of themselves, even the parts that we normally don't like so much.
And, you know, just talking to you, I feel a sense of just that peace, right? That quietness. As you said those words, right? No striving, just enjoying our portion, looking around and seeing other folks enjoying it as well. And we're all party of this big banquet that is realizing that we don't need to kill the other person. Sorry, mind my language.
Yeah, no, but exactly. Because in the world, we do kill a lot of other people. And we could all be just enjoying the abundance and the beauty that's all around us.
You know, for the younger ones coming in and hearing us speak this way, I'm just very cautious about that too, if you know what I mean, right?
All parts of us are welcome. Like, yes,
I know
the hardworking parts and everything are still there. They don't go away. But I do think we tend to err, at least in American society, not so much here in Alsatian France. I went in the bank yesterday, and the guy who served us was wearing a t-shirt and sneakers, and he was clearly gonna, you know, he said come at the end of the day to pick up your paperwork, and the end of the day was 3:30 p.m. So I think rural France, they're a little bit better of balancing. we're gonna work at the bank, but then when 4 o'clock hits, yeah, we're going not? Home. We're yeah. gonna go hike in the hills for a while. So there's the both end.
Yeah, I come from that very structured, highly performance based Asia. You know, that's my little upbringing, right?
Sure.
Not wanting to bring that into this episode at this point of time, because that's just gonna just stuff it all up. You know, it's just like it's like we're right smack in traffic jam, and I'm so used to that. You know what I mean? It's so used to that busyness, that buzz, that energy that keeps us going. And hearing all of this, and of course, you've got your journey as MCC, and me too, and 90 people that I've already interviewed on this wonderful 100 Master Coaches. And everyone's bringing in a different piece of that, I wouldn't say puzzle, but that piece of that cloth, that tapestry. And everything fits. That's so amazing. Right? If I interviewed more than the 100, I think this whole tapestry would extend.
Absolutely.
Include more versions of what coaching mastery or presencing is all about, or the expressions of our core competencies, you know, all of that, right? And it being lived out in that special way that combines the elements of our life, our shadows, our strengths. Every part of that is part and parcel of this beautiful painting that we are co-creating together.
Love that. Yeah, that co-creation is so, so lovely. And a lot of times at Awaken, one thing I do at Awaken is before anyone enters the community, whether they're a supplier or a staff member or a participant in our courses or whatever it is, we always ask one question that I need to hear a really clear answer from people. And that is that Awaken is founded on acceptance. Mm. And so one of the biggest pieces of our role as coaches and community members is to stop with the judging and start with allowing and affirming and accepting and loving people exactly the way they are right now without ever trying to fix or change them. And so we can have a cohort, you know, let's say we cap our cohorts at 12 people. We might have a Muslim, a Jewish person, a Sikh, a Christian, an atheist, you know, we're going to have a lot of representation, and our job is to listen and love. And those two are so close to each other. You know, we can have people who've just come out of a gender transition surgery or just come out of a divorce, or they've just changed countries. Like, people are going through major stuff when they come to a coach training course, and we want it to be a space of acceptance, love, and just this letting go of needing to fix or change anybody. And so I love the answers I get when I interview our participants, and they tell me why that is so important to them. And people have very, very good reasons about why they want it for themselves.
Yeah.
And then we start realizing how difficult it is, because there's very little in the world that trains us to relax and enjoy people and not try to make them better. And even in the coaching world, a lot of times we think you can be more, do more, be more productive, all that kind of stuff. And I believe that in a certain way, but I do think peak productivity comes from a really deep peace and checking in with yourself. It's not necessarily about speed or working harder. It's about who is yourself that's the witness of your life, and how can you connect with that self, because it's in all of us and it's connected between all of us. And it is not something that we need to produce. It's already there.
A thought just came in, Christy. I'm not sure whether you do work like this, as in being invited, let's say, to do a strategic intervention with C-suites at the workplace, for example, yeah, where they've got certain agendas written up there, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them would already bring it in their presence.
Yep.
And when they come together, right, everyone kind of knows each other's areas of, you know, push, right? And areas,
or they think they do.
Yes, exactly.
Do they? Yes.
Yeah. And then there's the underlying culture, right, that kind of says that's how we do things here, right?
Yep.
And then here comes a person like you or me, and we're not trying to show them anything that they don't already have, and yet allowing this safety in what they can share and how they can be and all of that to kind of allow that whatever it is that needs to come out from that discussion or that session. How do you manage a situation like that where there are just so many expectations or different expectations, and then the right to be right in a certain way?
Yeah. Is,
you know what I mean?
Oh, I love this kind of work so much, because I think the core question at the beginning of sessions like that is to ask, how do you want to be together? It's really designing the field between people, or allowing an aligned field to emerge. And it can take time. So I think rushing the alliance is the last thing you want to do. Like, it is so fundamental to really decide, what are we bringing to the space?
Mm.
You know, as we create our land together, it's almost like we all live in crazy land most of the time, but there is actually nirvana land, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. There is truth and wisdom and loving intelligence available to us,
yeah,
especially when people come together.
Mm.
And so inviting some slowness and peace. And then, I mean, there's so many tips and tricks you can use with having people first journal, first draw, first do things in pairs before they maybe show their heart to the rest of the group. There's a couple of really great books, I think, that are helpful. One of them is The Six Thinking Hats.
Yeah.
By De Bono, where you're actually inviting people into, you know, kind of like the Harvard Business Review books about crucial conversations, difficult conversations. You want to talk about identity, and you want to talk about emotions, not just the facts or the tasks. And so there's these different levels that you're excavating. And it can be done in a really transformative way, which is so much fun. One of my favorite things to do is community building. I love Peter Block's book, Community. And one of his six pillars of community building is invite dissent. I really geek out on how emotions move through groups. In fact, my major in university back in the day in communications was group dynamics. So I've been studying group dynamics for a very long time.
Yes.
Just love it. But you can tell, like, anxiety sometimes, or anger or fear, will get clustered. If one person is not speaking it, another person will be holding it for two or more people. And so you'll get an outburst, and people are like, see, that person is always the critical, angry one. It's like, then you go stand right next to the critical, angry person who's dissenting, and join them and really listen to them. And then say, like, who else wants to come a little closer over here? Because there's other people who are afraid to say that same thing, who haven't spoken up, which is why it's coming out so ferociously in one person. And see if you can kind of distribute the emotion back amongst the group members, and see if you can get more and more people to speak their truth.
Yeah.
Dissenters have so much wisdom. Anyway, I don't know if I could go off and talk on that for 6 hours, but yeah, team dynamics, group dynamics, how emotions move through a room, how people are, think they know stuff about other people and probably don't. I think another great book is, of course, Nancy Klein's Time to Think. Creating a thinking environment is really creating a coaching environment where you're listening with love. Maybe you use a talking piece, or maybe you have other ways that you can really get people to say what they really think and how they really feel. And I think really good decisions can come when you invite rich discussions that maybe feel like they're going to take longer, but they don't. They're so much more efficient.
Thank you. There's just so much in that, what did you just said, right? And what I'm taking out is that it's not to put that spotlight on that person, whoever that is, but to begin to understand where that's coming from, begin to celebrate that together as a group, and to see how that actually brings out the truth in others, where it's not just one person that is causing the ruckus, right? It is often an amalgamation over time, and then that one brave person is often going to be the one on the spotlight and the one to be blamed as well. So lots to unpack there, I know.
Scapegoating, yeah, things can happen, and it can be quite emotional work, but so worth doing. I mean, when we can create a field of love between people, and I may or may not use the word love in a corporate setting, but maybe a field of appreciation and positive regard for each other, and even just starting out with a round of gratitude for each other can go a long way. Before you start, and then let's get really clear on what topic is it that we're trying to make a decision on, what makes it important, all the usual coaching questions, but it is that peaceful connection with yourself in the room that makes a
That's
huge
true.
difference. And I think co-facilitation is so important too. Like if you and another person who both know how to connect to yourself and connect to others can both be in the room. There's so much that you can do just in the field between those two people that
Yeah,
can
it's
like
true.
whew, open it up for the rest of the folks in the room.
And whilst I'm hearing that, Christy, I'm sensing that's the role of us as coaches, isn't it? It's like to be there for the person when they need to allow their true self to come out. Because it's often very scary for someone to speak a new level of truth to themselves, right? Or to another person, being the coach, right? It's like, oh my
Yeah.
gosh.
Well, one trick that I have, I'll often introduce, I'll have a talking stick, and we call her Wanda, the wand of wisdom.
That's
And
beautiful.
so what we can do is we invite Wanda to speak. And
Nice.
so it just is a little bit removed. People have so much wisdom inside, but sometimes they can't say it. And we're like, let's have Wanda help. You can just hold Wanda, the wand of wisdom. Let her say the truth, and the person will just connect with Wanda, be like, this is what Wanda has to say. And then it's usually pretty impactful. And people are like, that actually was pretty truthful. Wanda's pretty smart.
That's
And
pretty
then
smart.
poor Joe gets to relax a little bit.
So good, so good.
Having that lightness and playfulness, especially in really, when there's fear or anger and stuff, can bring a lot of goodness to a team too.
What you said just now, it starts with that person first, because that person, whoever that person is, it's part and parcel of that group. So if
Yes.
each person could come out just a little bit more, a bit more truer to what they want to say, or what they want to, allow out from them, from within them. That's wonderful new little baby step for every person to step in closer as a group. I'm just metaphorically sensing this, right? Everyone's just coming out just a little bit And that brings that dynamic closer with one another.
Exactly. It's really building. We use a lot of bridge metaphors where, you know, if you have kind of a rickety bridge with just a few wooden slats, you're not going to try to drive a 10-ton truck across it, right? Mm. Or a lorry. But what you do want to do is decide, like, what would we like to be able to drive across, and therefore what concrete pillars might we need to put in place? Yeah. And so you're not going to ask people on a team to share their whole hearts and take all their armor off and come out, you know, big, wide open heart, ready to get speared in the chest, when that's not what's happened yet.
Yeah.
But we do a little vulnerability builds a little trust, plus a little vulnerability plus a little more trust. And you just keep on having the behaviors that you want to have over time until people are like, yeah, this is how we are here now.
Yeah. I'm going to circle back to that whole journey as a coach.
Hmm.
We've come a long way in this chat, and what you've shared thus far, Christy, is just beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm thinking for the ones that are just stepping into their first certification, coming out, you know, the brand new world for them, ACC is up next, perhaps, and they're wondering, what wisdom can you share with me so that I can get on my merry way and start well, right? Mm. The old question that everyone asks. So wanting to tap on your wisdom on that.
I would say to start well, be yourself early and often. Check in with yourself, trust yourself, let yourself make mistakes. Like, the last thing you want to do is get everything right, have a really great outcome, add so much value, work so hard. Like, that's not the energy that's the most effective in coaching, which it can be a dark night of the ego, I would say, to let go of, I'm going to do a really good job in this coaching session. Or I'm going to show that I know things or any of that. And the more you can just sink into, like, there is a huge well of love, peace, and joy available to me.
Yeah.
And it's available to everyone else. So tap into it yourself. Over and over again, as soon as you recognize you've gone into fixing or striving or impressing or anything else, tap back into that just ocean of peace, love, and joy that's waiting for you, and then invite your conversation partners to do the same. Just slow things down, trust good things are just waiting to happen, and relax into it. If you make a mistake, I mean, really, what's a mistake? You tried something, didn't work, try something else, right? Yeah. Just don't put a lot of pressure on yourself to get it right. Just be open, loving, learning, growing. Let it happen.
Yeah. And I just love how you say they are conversation partners. I don't hear that very often. And when I pick it up, you know, it just resonates so deeply in me. It's so true, right? Instead of making it too serious, right? And I've heard a variety of that, right? I mean, some are very nice, like, you know, we're thinking partners. That's beautiful as well. Conversation partners, it's also beautiful. And just wanting to know if there is a little something about conversation partners that you would like to elaborate on.
I mean, to me, MCC level coaching or any coaching that's really helpful sounds like a conversation. It doesn't sound like an interview or an interrogation or like you're working really hard.
That's true.
And it might be a slower conversation than you'd normally have. And it might be just more loving, more curious, more playful, more attentive. Yeah. But it's still a conversation. You're just inviting the other person to hear themselves talk.
Yeah.
And you're paying attention. And that is loving. And people, I mean, especially in their first couple of coaching sessions, it's very moving. Most people have never been listened to
Wow.
for 5 whole minutes without interruption, let alone 45 or 60. And so I think just remembering what a gift and an honor it is to allow that spaciousness for someone.
It is.
That's all.
It is a gift. It is a gift. And I'm just sensing, right? Sometimes we may be the ones withholding the gift, right? In fear of how we are showing up, right? All those things of what we've probably experienced, right? The mix of the ego or wanting to be right and wanting to prove something, wanting to show our prowess in coaching a little bit, you know, all of the above, right? We've probably experienced it. We will continue to experience it and also have the grace to accept that it's sometimes still around. And yeah, maybe that peace, love, and care for your own self, and appreciate who we are at this moment in time may help us in this flow of who we are becoming. Christy, any last words that you'd like to share?
That's just to anyone listening, love yourself as best you can. Even the parts of yourself that you don't usually appreciate, just see if you can, especially if you're doing team coaching. We all have these inner teams, and loving the part that criticizes or protects or jumps in or acts like a toddler, and giving yourself, all the parts of yourself, as much kindness and compassion as you can, is going to go a long way in your ability to offer kindness to all the personalities that are showing up on a team or in an individual client. And yeah, what you do for yourself is what you can do for others.
So beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for the love that you have shown on this call, Christy. That love extends even from what you're saying to all of our listeners. So, yeah.
Thank you, Mel. What an honor. I wish so many good things and good health for you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So this has been the 100 Master Coaches show today with Christy and myself, Mel, reminding all of us to be kind to ourselves, to love the person in front of the mirror before we can extend that wonderful love to the rest of everyone else out there. Stay safe, be well. Bye for now.
You have been watching the 100 Master Coaches series with your host, Coach Mel, MCC. Brought to you by Catalyst Coach. www.catalystcoach.live. We will be right back with our next Master Coach on the 100 Master Coaches series.